Family farmers have faced tough times in recent years, and that's not the first time. The 1980s farm crisis brought rising costs for farmers along with severe weather that damaged crops. And a federal agency designed to assist farmers was threatening many of them with foreclosure and the prospect of losing their farms altogether. That kicked off a legal fight against the federal government, spearheaded by our next guest in a case known as Coleman versus Block. We're talking about the story behind that case and what lessons it has for the challenges facing farmers today. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you remember about the 1980s farm crisis? Did you or maybe someone in your family lose the family farm during that time or come close to it? Do you see parallels between what family farms went through in the 80s, what they're seeing right now? If you work in farming or agriculture, we'd love to hear from you. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah Vogel is the former commissioner of agriculture in North Dakota. She was the first woman in U.S. history elected to that position in any state. She tells the story of her legal fight in her new book, The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine, and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. Sarah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. It's a treat to be here.
And I wanted to set the stage, first of all. Farmers are facing tough times, family farmers in North Dakota for a variety of reasons. Then there's this change of administration and a policy from the federal government in the early years of the Reagan administration when it came to farm loans through the Farmers Home Administration. What was the big change that really set the stage for your court case?
It was the appointment of David Stockman as the director of Office of Management and Budget. He believed that the government had no business lending to farmers or to other small businesses, and he set up really severe delinquency reduction quotas for reducing the debt. And that those instructions went from him to Secretary Block to Charles Schumann, who ran the Farmers Home Administration. And the net result was basically a quota where every state had to achieve roughly 25% reduction in delinquent loans in a matter of months over the winter of 1982. And it set off a tsunami of foreclosures all across the country. And I was a lawyer. Just returned from a career in Washington, D.C. I was in North Dakota working with farmers, and I saw the real life impacts of that policy on many of my clients.
Yeah, we just heard the big picture there. Can you zoom in now? For the farmers who became your clients, what did this policy mean to them? What did it look like?
Oh, it was awful. They were going along, having tough times, which, happens periodically in agriculture. And all of a sudden, one day, they would write a check and it would bounce. Or they'd go to the bank to withdraw money and there'd be no money in the bank account. And that's because Farmers Home had seized the money from their bank account. From that point forward, no money would be released to them for any purpose. If they sold a crop, all the money went to Farmers Home. Nothing went for the farmer. Nothing went to, pay their bills to Main Street. It all went back to Farmers Home in this attempt to reduce their delinquency. And in the result, they were starving the farmers off the farms. They were told, you have one choice. It's to quit farming voluntarily or we'll foreclose on you. Those were the only two choices farmers were being given. And it was happening to many, many thousands of farmers all over the country. It was really brutal.
A farmer in that position, of course, can't go out and hire a high-priced attorney. How did you end up being their last resort in a lot of ways?
Well, I'd been sort of programmed from birth. My family belonged to the Nonpartisan League, which was a political party pretty unique to North Dakota, but it did spread out in the early teens to a number of states, including Wisconsin and Minnesota and even Canada. And the Nonpartisan League believed that government should be very supportive of farmers and power the power of government belonged to the voters. So, and their main premise in the Nonpartisan League was that the duty of government to support family farmers. They were the lifeblood of North Dakota. So I grew up in this political party, and part of the legend, because it was history, it was true, is that the Nonpartisan League did a lot for the farmers in the 1930s. The governor of North Dakota, Governor Langer, declared a moratorium on all farm foreclosures. Leaders, national leaders in the U.S. Congress were Nonpartisan Leaguers, and they helped get laws passed that helped farmers. So when this cataclysm hit, and I had just returned to North Dakota from working on the East Coast for about 10 years, I felt like I had no option. I had to help these farmers. I just had to. And I didn't realize at the time how incredibly difficult it would be, because by definition, every single one of my clients had not one penny to pay me. So they were bringing me fish that they caught and vegetables from the garden, and they would take gas from their on-farm storage and, give me $5 or $10, or sometimes they would borrow money from relatives and use it to pay me. But it was pretty tough. I mean, I was as poor as they were, but we worked together and we were pretty passionate about what we were doing.
We're talking to Sarah Vogel. Her new book is The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine and the Fight to Save the Family Farm, about a pivotal case in the 1980s with farm foreclosures coming from the federal government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share, maybe from that era or of the challenges facing your family farm, maybe right now, 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go to your calls now. Bill is with us in Sun Prairie. Bill, hello.
Yes, this is Bill in Sun Prairie. Wanted to tell the story about our family farm. My dad died in 1984 from emphysema. And my mother was left with the farm. Two of my brothers were trying to make a go of it, and because of low prices, they had to file bankruptcy. Well, the Farmers Home Administration was in the process of foreclosing. Well, later on in the later 80s, Farmers Home Administration come out with a program where they would buy down their debt. In other words, you could pay off up to 50% of the debt, and the debt would be considered paid off. Well, I was able to negotiate a bank loan for my mother and sign the farm up into the CRP program. That was paying the debt, or paying off the bank each year. My mother then sold two 40s, mostly wooded areas, which most farmers weren't interested in at that time, and paid off that debt. She was able then to live off that income from that farm for close to 20 years before she passed away. And we just sold the last 110 acres about 3 years ago, and it was paid off last year. And the family got roughly $37,000. A family of 11 got roughly $37,000 each out of that farm remaining,
Bill, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Sarah, what that makes me think is, he said those options came along later in the 80s. For your clients, they were not being presented with really any options, right?
That's right. What the caller just talked about came as a result of the 1987 Ag Credit Act, and that was that saved many, many, many farmers. It was these were desperate times, and eventually Congress came to the rescue with quite a few debt restructuring options that saved a lot of farmers. But when I filed the case, none of that was on the horizon yet.
Bill, thanks again for sharing that story. We're talking to Sarah Vogel about her new book, The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story about your own family's farm back in the 80s or today, the challenges, maybe the legal challenges facing you, or financial, call 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Sarah Vogel about her new book, The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Maybe if you have a personal story or a family story to share of the challenges facing farmers, your own family maybe, in the 1980s or beyond, 800-642-1234 is the number. Sarah, let's pick things up back the case now. You're the lawyer here, not getting paid a lot for these farmers who don't have anything to spend. What kind of things did you discover when it came to how these, especially these local county agents or supervisors, were dealing with these farmers?
Well, they tended to be, it was a bureaucracy, and they tended to follow orders from on high. So Stockman ordered Block, and he ordered Truman to do the different things. It went down to the state office, and then it went to the county offices. And, so the initiative to do these dreadful things to farmers did not come from the grassroots people. It came from on top, but they felt they had to follow orders. In subsequent years, I've learned that many people quit working at Farmers Home because they couldn't bear doing that. But that's how it came about. It came from Washington, D.C. It did not come from the countryside.
Let's go back to our callers now. Greg is with us in Jefferson. Greg, hi.
Hi. Thanks, sir. I have a question. Do you think there was anything in the mid-70s, early 70s that sort of led decisions maybe out of the USDA or out of Washington that sort of led farmers to overextend? My family's farm shrunk from about 900 acres to 200 in the early 80s. And it was just like your thoughts about that.
Greg, thanks for the call. We also heard via email from Jim in Cedarburg wondering about the impact of the Nixon and Earl Butts farm bill in working up to this. So can you set the stage for us a little bit in the 1970s before the change in the 80s that set the stage here?
Yeah, they were basically preaching from Washington, get big or get out. More and more and more people were supposed to get bigger, sell more. Land values were going up. They're really strong markets in Russia. And then all of a sudden things came to a crashing halt. And there was, it was just devastating. So many people had borrowed money in good times, and then suddenly the rug was pulled out from under them. And it's kind of a lesson in overexpansion as well as overcontraction. So I was not worried so much with the overall economic themes. I just felt that these particular farmers, the ones I was working with, had been given a very, very bad deal. And there were laws that USDA was supposed to be following, and they were supposed to be following the Constitution. So, yeah, I mean, they could seek to foreclose on a farmer, but they had to follow the law. They had to follow the rules, and they weren't. So the lawsuit was saying there was a law called the 1980, it was a law passed in the Carter era that gave farmers the right to apply for deferral when they were temporarily unable to pay due to circumstances beyond their control. And USDA was not implementing that law. Moreover, they were not following the Constitution. They were not providing due process to those farmers and taking away their property. So the lawsuit that I brought with the help of the nine farmers, who were the North Dakota Nine, they were the lead plaintiffs. Eventually, it moved from nine lead plaintiffs to over 240,000 farmers nationwide and stopped many tens of thousands of farm foreclosures across the country. But, very difficult times.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. This is a long uphill process. What ultimately happened in this case? What was the ruling that, as you said, ultimately prevented many foreclosures?
We had a wonderful judge, Judge Bruce M. Van Sickle, who had grown up in the 30s. He was a Republican. He was a compassionate and fair person. And he listened to our arguments and he heard us. And he said that, yes, the federal government has to follow the law. The federal government has to follow the Constitution. And he gave us a preliminary injunction stopping USDA from foreclosure until they provided farmers with a chance to apply for deferral and required them to follow the Constitution if they wanted to collect against the farmer. And that injunction was first in North Dakota. And then over the summer of 1983, there were so many calls from all over the country that eventually we, because by then I had other lawyers helping me too, but by then we expanded it into a national class action. And so it expanded to cover all farmers nationwide that borrowed from Farmers Home Administration. And at the end of the day, I think there were 16,000 farm cases already in court or heading to court. And so Judge Van Sickle's settlement, his injunction protected all those farmers from further actions by USDA. So USDA had to send all those foreclosure cases back to the countryside, reopen the loan processing process. And then Congress in 1987 stepped in and set into place actual debt settlement procedures and, you know, really helped farmers dig their way out of the morass that so many were in. The farmers, I want to emphasize that the farmers were producing as much and very well. I mean, it was not that they were inefficient or improvident. They were the best farmers, and they tended to be younger too, because older farmers had less debt. Younger farmers had gone to Farmers Home and borrowed. So it was a whole generation of farmers that were threatened by these actions of the federal government in the early 80s. It was pretty darn dramatic.
We're talking to Sarah Vogel, author of the new book, The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. Sarah, most of your book is looking at this this case in the 80s. You also have your eye, though, on the modern day. We hear here in Wisconsin, bigger farms doing okay, a lot of new smaller farms doing all right. The medium-sized family farm, a worry here and a worry for you. Why is that?
Well, it's, you know, the very smallest of farms can often find off-farm employment to support the farm family. And the very largest firms, you know, they borrow from big banks or Wall Street, or, you know, they make it, the very biggest. But it's the ones in the middle-sized family farms, the backbone of America, the ones that the founding fathers believed democracy could not survive without. Those are the ones in trouble. And I wrote the book because I want to waken people up to the importance of family farmers to our democracy, to our society, to our survival. And I think COVID has certainly demonstrated that, you know, when there are shortages of food and, you know, you don't want to wait for products to be shipped in from Japan or China or Europe. You know, it's better if it's grown nearby. And so we're at a crisis point. And I think there are many, many good things that are going on now, and we all need to support them. In the end of the book, I recommend that people go to, say, the Farm Aid website and look at all the local organizations that are working to save family farms. The National Farmers Union, the Wisconsin Farmers Union, those are also great organizations. There's an entity called the Farmers Legal Action Group that was founded as a part of the 1980s farm crisis. And they're there to help lawyers. You know, if farmers need legal help, there are legal resources that they could use. And I really wrote the book maybe to provide hope to people that in prior very, very tough times, many people did make it through. many people did survive. Many people were given hope by actions of Congress or what I did in court or what other lawyers did and other farmers and farm organizations. So there's always hope, and people should reach out. And I know today, you know, there are suicide hotlines and, you know, sources. There are places for people to reach out. And I hope that people who are in distress do reach out for help, because there may be very well help. It's very uneven too. I want to emphasize that, like, dairy farmers, I think, are particularly distressed. Beginning farmers are particularly distressed. So it varies by region. So you shouldn't look at just national statistics. You need to look at the people and how they are.
And that's a good place to leave it, Sarah. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's wonderful talking to you, Rob. Thank you so much.
You too. That's Sarah Vogel, the author of The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine, and The Fight to Save the Family Farm.